Hello, and thank you for downloading this episode of Radio Grimbald from RadioGrimbald.com. I am your host, Goldine Ogawa, and welcome to the third episode of Radio Grimbald. Today on the podcast, I'll be reading a short story called Sandals and Sword, and it really doesn't need any introduction, because I actually wrote the introduction, and it's attached to the story. And so, when it comes to introducing the story itself, I will defer to that. Now, I do want to talk about fairy tales, particularly fairy tales, not just any old stories. I think that fairy tales are very important to the kind of universal psyche of a culture. We grow up with fairy tales. We're exposed to them at that very early impressionable age. So I really feel that what's in a fairy tale is very, very important for creating a society that is good, that has, you know, decency and morality. I believe that it really is. I think that fairy tales are, I'm not saying that they're the sole reason we have decency and morality, but I think that they are very important. I think that they're an important element in that. And because I feel this way, I am deeply disturbed when I find fairy tales that seem to be sort of leave well enough alone when it comes to leaving women in compromised positions. And I'll get into that more in the foreword. But so I wrote this really because I wanted to provide a fairy tale for little girls like me when I was a little girl. And I didn't want to be the damsel in the distress. I didn't want to be the one stuck up in the tower waiting for my prince. I wanted to go out and do things. And this desire for stories that had characters that I could relate to, female characters particularly. There are plenty of male characters I could relate to, but I didn't fancy being any of the girls. And this kind of dearth of good female characters is one of the main reasons I started writing stories. Because I originally wanted to be an actor. And I started reading for parts and realizing that none of the parts I could read for I really wanted to play, because I could only read for the girl parts. I wanted to play Wesley, you know, or Inigo. I didn't want to play Buttercup. And so I said, hold on a second, guys. I'm going to go off. This is when I was about 12, I think. I'm going to go off and I'm going to write some stories with parts I'd like to play. I'll be back in a bit. I'm still writing the stories. And I've decided since then that I actually fancy writing a good deal more than acting. But this story is you know, the motivation for this is kind of comes and goes. The previous story that I read actually had no female characters in it. So I try to keep a balance. I don't want to be seen to be favoring one sex over another. I don't think that's right. I think that we should just, that things should be equal. But this story, it definitely shows through very strongly. And I want to say, if there's any boys listening, this one's for you also. Because I don't think that you guys really dig it when the girls are just these spineless, brainless wimps. And if you want to read stories about boys having adventures, there's a history full of books for you. And I just hope you like this one anyway. And that's really all I have to say about that. I'll stop blathering and let what I've written speak for itself. Author's note. This story is assembled from bits and pieces of other stories that have been around for a long time. This being so, I cannot take credit for some of the basic concepts, and well-traveled readers will surely recognize the parts I have cannibalized from other tales. Some details, however, are of my own invention, and the animal that these parts have been assembled into is very different from any of its forebears. Certainly, it is nothing like any story I have ever read,
If it were, I would not have felt obliged to write this one.
I came up with this story because I saw, one, that fairy tales seem to consider getting the heroine married off at the end the only prerequisite for happily ever after, and I do not think this ideal is healthy for young girls, and, two, that the positions of the heroines of Rumpelstiltskin and Scheherazade at their respective endings are entirely unacceptable. Both wind up tied to murderous, avaricious, sociopathic men. Not something any woman in her right mind should feel obliged to accept. And it is not healthy for the men either to be led to believe that they can behave so badly and still have a loving wife. This story, which I have cobbled together from pieces of Rumpelstiltskin, Rapunzel, and 1001 Nights, should provide a happy solution to all these problems and save some other frustrated reader the trouble of writing it themselves. Sandals and Sword. I have been with my lord husband for 1,000 days and nights. 1,000 days of fear and 1,000 nights of feverish storytelling. My lord husband has a keen interest in stories. Indeed, they are the only things that can steer his mind away from his other fancy, devising ways of killing me. So I have been telling stories each and every night, with each story leading into the next, to keep his mind off lethal paths. But tonight shall be different. Tonight I have run to the end of all my stories, and must bring this chapter, and perhaps my own life, to a close. I take a fond look around the candlelit room. My lord husband comes. I make room for him in the bed, and he lies down beside me. There is something cold between us. His knife, which never strays far from his hand.
"Will you finish the story tonight, my love?" he asks me.
"Of course, my lord," I reply.
"Then I shall wait to kill you until you have finished."
"Of course, my lord."
"Where were we?"
"I was telling you of the miller's daughter, my lord."
"Yes?"
"The miller's daughter, whose father was such a terrible liar."
"Tell me."
"So I begin."
Once upon a time, not too long ago, there was a prosperous miller who had three beautiful daughters. They were all bright and cheerful and quick and clever. But these virtues were not enough for their vainglorious father, and he went about the village telling all sorts of falsehoods and making people believe that these girls were capable of feats of which they were not. Because of these lies, they became embroiled in the most dreadful situations. The youngest sister was given away to a witch when she was 12, because her father had promised that her hair was the longest and the most golden of any in the kingdom. The witch locked her away in a high tower, with neither stair nor door, where she lived alone and miserable. The middle sister ran away from home after her father spread a lie, saying she could turn anything to gold with the touch of her finger. No one knows what became of her. And the eldest sister, whom their father said could spin cobwebs into quicksilver, was married to a lord of particular avarice, who valued quicksilver above all the jewels and riches in the land. Now this lord, who I must remind you was ever so greedy, asked the eldest sister to spin him some quicksilver from the copious amounts of cobwebs in the attic of his house. The eldest sister, who was no fool and honest besides, immediately explained to him the truth, that she could not spin cobwebs into quicksilver, and that he had been the victim of a cruel lie. But her husband, instead of rightly being angry with her father, who I must remind you had told the lie in the first place, did not believe her. He locked her in the highest and cobwebbiest room with a little food and water, a spinning wheel, distaff, and spindle, and told her to spin it all to quicksilver in 3 days and nights, or he would kill her. Now the eldest sister was clever and brave, but there is little cleverness can do about a locked and bolted door, and little bravery can do when faced with a spinning wheel. So she sat and brooded, trying to come up with a plan to escape her predicament. After an evening spent in this fashion, when the eldest sister was near despair, a funny little man appeared at the window and said, "Forgive my intrusion, mistress, but what is the matter?" The eldest sister looked up in surprise, for she knew there was no way to reach that window, and she had not expected company. She regarded her visitor for some moments, as he was an unusual sort of fellow. Very small and brown he was, with a long hooked nose and long twisted ears. He had bushy white eyebrows and a ferret-like face. She could see he was a fairy, and she knew she must be careful. Fairies, my lord, will not help you without a price, and they are often quite unreasonable about it. But after some consideration, the eldest sister decided that her situation was bad enough. She could do with whatever help came to hand. So she explained about the cobwebs and the spinning wheel, and how she must spin it all into quicksilver in 3 days and nights, or her husband would kill her.
"Why, then you are in luck, mistress!" cried the fairy, leaping into the room and bowing low. "For I can spin even the roughest, dustiest cobweb into the finest quicksilver."
"That is a most generous offer, good fairy," said the eldest sister. "But what must I grant you in return?"
"Oh, only the smallest thing," said the fairy, smiling crookedly. "Only your first-born child, my dear. That is all I desire."
"My first-born child!" exclaimed the eldest sister.
"Your first-born child," smiled the fairy.
The eldest sister thought about this a good long while, realizing full well that this did not necessarily ensure her future happiness. Then at last she came to a decision. "Agreed, then," she said. "You shall have my first-born child, fairy, but in return I would like not that you sit and spin for me every night. Instead, it would please me better if you were to bring me a particular object each night, whatever I desire." Now, the fairy was a little confused about this, but it seemed no great difference to him, so he agreed. "For my first object," said the eldest sister, "I would very much like you to bring me a pair of winged sandals capable of bearing the wearer through the air with ease and speed."
"Aha!" cried the fairy. "I know just where to find such a pair."
And he darted off through the window. In the morning, when the eldest sister awoke, there were a pair of winged sandals laid by her bed. She hid the sandals, and when her husband came to check on her, he found her still in bed.
"Why have you not spun these cobwebs into quicksilver?" he demanded. "If you do not, you know I shall have to kill you."
"I know," said the eldest sister, "but spinning is such tiring work. You ask me to spin so much, I must rest before attempting such a task." So her husband went away. That night, when the fairy came, the eldest sister asked for a sword, long and sharp, that hated men and loved to kill. The fairy smiled and nodded and said he knew of just such a sword. In the morning, a long sword and a blood-red scabbard was laid across the foot of the eldest sister's bed, and such was the menace it exuded that she wrapped it up in her counterpane and stuffed it in the closet. When her husband came that morning, he found her busily at work winding the masses of grubby cobwebs onto a distaff. "These webs are in such a mess," she complained to him before he could speak. "You expect me to spin and spin and spin and do not even bother to prepare the cobwebs properly. Now go away and leave a woman to work." So her husband went away. That evening, the third evening, when the fairy came, he found the room quite clean, with all the cobwebs on the distaffs and gathered in a basket by the spinning wheel. "There, fairy," said the eldest sister, "I have made the webs ready. You should be able to spin it all in one night." The fairy was a little daunted by this task, but he thought of the promised child and licked his lips. He set to work, and the eldest sister lay down in bed and pretended to sleep. The fairy spun all night, turning the dull grey cobwebs into bright quicksilver, which he gathered in pans spread out on the floor. When at last he was finished, he was too tired even to magic himself away, and fell asleep right there at the spinning wheel. Then, and only then, did the eldest sister rise from her bed. She pulled out the winged slippers and put them on her feet. She skipped over to the closet and pulled out the killing sword in its blood-red sheath. And then she flitted to the window, soft and quiet as an owl. When the fairy woke a few hours later, he was quite surprised to find himself alone. But knowing he could find the woman whensoever she had her first child, he did not think on it much, and magicked himself home. So, when the greedy, greedy husband came, his own sword in hand, he found the room empty of persons, but the floor covered with pans, each filled with gleaming, glistening quicksilver. How the lord raged then at the wicked trickiness of women, how he called down all sorts of awful curses upon the eldest sister for deserting him, her rightful husband. But he consoled himself in his new wealth of quicksilver, and to tell the truth, he lived quite happily for many years, until eventually he died of mercury poisoning. The eldest sister, in the meantime, flew away through the night in her winged sandals until she came to the high tower with no stair where her youngest sister was held prisoner. Needless to say, they were quite happy to see each other, and the eldest sister took the younger onto her back, and they flew away. A hush in the room. The candles are burning low. My lord husband speaks. But, my dearest, what became of the eldest sister's first-born child?
Why, nothing, my lord. She never had any children. Both her sisters will eventually marry good men and have large families, so she needs no children of her own. She will be a very good aunt to all her nieces and nephews, and when the fairy comes to complain, as of course he will, she will give him back the sandals and sword, and tell him not to make such unfair deals with compromised young women.
But, my love, you have not told me what became of the middle sister.
The middle sister, my lord?
Yes, the one that ran away.
I am silent. I have come to the end. I do not know what to say. Then, at last, you already know her, my lord.
I do. Well, is that the end?
It is the end, my lord.
Oh. Then I suppose I will kill you now.
Yes, my lord. The knife between us is warm now, and I feel it move against my skin as he clenches his hand around the handle.
My love, says my lord husband, what was that sound?
What sound, my lord?
That fishing, swishing sound, like little wings.
I do not know, my lord.
And there, that sounded like the window being opened. See how the curtains billow and blow about.
Yes, my lord, I see them billow. My, how fiercely they move. It is almost as though someone is shaking them.
My love, what is that light? That long, sharp, red, red light. There is no candle in that part of the room.
No, my dearest, there is not.
Then what is happening? Who is there? I am, says my elder sister, stepping from behind the curtain, winged sandals on her feet, the killing sword in her hand.
And that, my best beloveds, is why you must never cross your favourite aunt, however so kind she is to you. The End.
So there is Sandals and Sword, copyright 2011 by me, Goldin Ogawa. And Sandals and Sword was one of those stories that just kind of poured out one morning. And it really didn't feel so much like I was writing a story, rather that all the pieces were there, sitting. The spinning cobwebs into mercury I'd thought up a long time ago. And, of course, I borrowed the winged slippers from Perseus. I don't know where I got the killing sword from, and I'm not sure I really want to know. But it was really, I just had all these pieces, and one morning I was angry enough after reading, I think it was like a retelling of Rumpelstiltskin, and it just suddenly struck me how awful it must be. Like, the whole point of Rumpelstiltskin at the end is that, you know, she's tricked Rumpelstiltskin and she gets to keep the baby that she had because she's stuck married to this king who threatened to kill her if she couldn't spin straw into gold? It's like, what? No. And I was so mad, I sat down and wrote Sandals and Sword. This is not to say in any way that I have any ill feelings towards men. I only have ill feelings towards people who write such morally unsound stories. Anyway, I could go on at length, and but I really don't want to inflict that on an unwilling audience. So I'll just leave it at that. Sandals and Sword is, again, part of the collection Fiddler's Dream and Other Stories. It's a short story collection, which is available for listeners or readers in the US, UK, France, or Germany. At the Amazon Kindle store. If you're in the US, UK, France, Germany, Canada, or Australia, you can also buy it on iTunes. It is not on the Barnes & Noble store yet. I am working on that. But Fiddler's Dream and Other Stories, it has the stories that I read on the last two podcasts, and this one, plus one other, which I'll be getting to in a little bit. Next week, however, I'm not going to be reading from the Fiddler's Collection, as it were. I'm going to be reading a standalone short story called The Man in the Chest. And I don't want to give anything away, so you'll just have to tune in next week. If you have any comments, questions, concerns, or just general feedback or questions, you can send me an email at goldinogawa@gmail.com. That's goldinogawa@gmail.com. Special thanks for their help in the production of Radio Grimbald go out to Marion Goldin, my wonderful mother, Evan Ogawa, and Rachel Goldin for creating the theme music, and of course to you for listening. Radio Grimbald is written, performed, edited, and just about everything else by me, Goldin Ogawa. Find out more on the web at radiogrimbald.com and goldinogawa.com. Thank you for listening, and until next week, take care and have fun. Thank you.